This episode is brought to you by our new partner, Energy Sage. Solar panels are great at saving you money and the planet, this you know, but figuring out exactly what type of system and panel is right for you isn't super easy. That's where Energy Sage comes in. They offer multiple ways to actually get solar, either through a community solar program where you are supporting a local community solar farm, or by actually installing rooftop solar on your own home. And in this episode specifically, you're going to hear Joe's story about how he has been struggling this for a while now. And this was the platform that I actually used to go solar over 5 years ago. Prior to even becoming a partner of theirs, their blog and all the information they had here was really instrumental in me understanding what to do and then making a good decision. And at the end of this year, in 2022, the federal ITC, the tax credit you get by going solar, drops from 26 to 22%. So getting this ball rolling now is really important. So if you want to compare up to 7 different local offers, you want to save about 20% over the market average, and even have a dedicated energy advisor, head over to rludicrousfuture.com/energysage. Now let's start the show. Hey guys, how are you? What's new?
I've been watching the It's Always Sunny podcast while I'm cooking lately, and it's very much like it just randomly starts with them just talking.
So first off, you cook. Tell me about this. What are you cooking?
Whatever HelloFresh sends me. This is not an ad.
I was about to say, that brings us to today's sponsor.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Holding up my EVgo mug. So, Tim, how is life up there, man? I see you got a sexy shirt on that you want to tell us all about.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
And if you guys
are just listening, you need to go watch this.
Well, or finally.
It has the nipples cut out.
Or just little doors.
little window. Like, instead of a pocket, you just fold it down.
Yeah. That'll be the next version. No, we finally, after almost 19 months of work, we finally this weekend will be releasing our dress wear along with our model rockets, our 1/100 scale model rockets.
1/100? So like, how big is that? Like, give me on the screen here.
This is a prototype, an early prototype that was 3D printed. And
oh my God.
The real ones are metal. But yeah.
These it's like a meter tall almost.
It's 0.2. Let me think about it. Falcon 9 is 72 meters tall, 70 meters tall. So it'd be 0.7 meters tall.
Yeah. Look at that.
Trying to keep it simple. And the whole goal with that is like, I want all these rockets that I have in the background, I want them all to be scale with each other and high quality. Like, these are all of varying quality and of varying detail. Like, some things are really highly detailed but fragile and expensive. Other things are relatively low fidelity. Some things are like, you can't buy them. You know, I really want to have like stuff that's all to the same scale. And yeah, that's been something we've been working on also for a year and a half, and they're finally all coming out this weekend.
That's
all.
And now are you guys making these yourselves? I mean, you got the merch and the shirts and all that, but the rockets, how are you actually making them?
Yeah. We mass produced, we bought molds and like metal casting. I mean, it was a big thing. It was a very big thing. The molds are done in China. Final assembly is done in the United States and packaging in the United States and all that stuff. But
so this is why the Cybertruck's been delayed, right?
Yes.
Guys, hold on. We need to make these little rocks. I'm stoked on that. Is this something my kids could play with, or would it be like way too expensive and no, like not durable?
They're expensive. Yeah. They're definitely expensive. But the goal was to be cheaper than like almost any of similar detail and similar, you know, they're meant to be like display pieces, but I wanted to be cheaper than like anything you can buy of similar scale and detail, but higher quality. So like physically, like I don't want it to break. I'm so nervous to touch any of these rockets because like if you handle them, they will break. So these are like metal. I just didn't want to have to worry about it. If you let kids play with them, they'll inevitably become a bop them on the head weapon. Like, guaranteed. You could knock some. It's like 4 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Of just solid metal.
Oh, it's metal. It's not like plastic.
No, it's full blown. Like, it's cast metal. You would really
full
hurt someone.
Full metal rocket.
An FMR.
BFMR.
So is it just the Falcon 9, or do you have other models?
We're starting with the Falcon 9 just because we know it's, we'll see how it does. If we get good feedback and if people actually buy them, you know, it's a pretty big risk. Like,
yeah,
you know, to make the molds and do all that stuff was like a huge investment up front. So we'll see if it was worth it. And if it was clearly worth it and people love it and want more, then we'll go to the next one. And I think, you know, I want to start with all like the crewed rockets. I think that'd be fun. Like do a space shuttle, do a Soyuz, I would love to see like Mercury compared to Gemini compared to Apollo and Saturn V. Would be awesome to see all that at scale. It would just be the coolest. So
yeah, that's amazing.
That's the goal.
Cool.
Yeah. Big, finally like rounding the corner of what has felt like the longest project I've worked on besides the Soviet rocket.
So you do a lot of merch stuff. Like, do you still get that nervousness when you finally get something together and it's kind of like, oh my God, I've spent all this time and money and effort on this and I still don't know completely whether or not it's gonna, you know, people are gonna want it? Or
this is the worst. Both of these things, the dress wear was also a pretty big investment because we had to like send these out to all get patterns and, you know, sewn and all that stuff. So both,
and I'm sure you're an expert in patterns and fabrics and textiles and stuff.
None of this stuff, like these were both pretty big, like throw it at the wall, see if it sticks. But there are things that people have been asking for a long time. So I just hope that we made people happy.
Well, I'm happy because you have, I mean, this was my aversion to doing merch always is like, a couple years ago was like, I'm done wearing logo shirts. I'm done wearing shirts with some stupid phrase or thing on them that I, you know, because what happens is inevitably you're somewhere and you have one of these dumb shirts on and you take a great photo. And then years later, you're like, oh God, why did I do that? Like, there was beautiful, you somewhere special. It's like a special moment. You have some stupid.
It's like, I fart and my EV.
Yeah, like you have completely irrelevant 5, 10, 15. So it's just like, I'm like, look, I'm a grown up now, right? I need to wear clothes without logos or without those things. And that's why I was always against merch, because I was like, well, this is dumb. I wouldn't wear this, right? But I love that you're doing something.
Here's the counter argument, though.
Other people would.
Here's the counter argument is if you hold on to it long enough, it becomes cool again.
That's true.
Like if you walked out right now with like a Who Let the Dogs Out shirt, just strutting with it, like everybody be like, wow.
Yeah.
This guy
over in Bishop Hill.
Or like those old, you know, all those old, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like a Marlboro or whatever, you know, old shirt. Or like my dad had a bunch of old bicycle like company shirts.
I mean,
when I was
like a Metallica shirt or something, or like a Whitesnake t-shirt,
right?
You know, the sleeves cut off kind of a thing. I'm in. Yep. I'm in on all these things, guys. This is
good lawn mowing attire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So merch is for 30 years in the future. So your kids think you're cool. So your kids think you work.
You know,
ironically,
I'll tell you a secret right now. It doesn't last long how long they think you're cool. It's coming to an end for me, my friends.
Have you seen that meme that has I forget the name of the guy from Pantera and, Slayer, the lead singer of Slayer. He's on the red carpet and his kid, he's like kind of like that or something. And his kids are like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's like, even if you're the lead singer of Slayer, your kids think that you're lame, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Chris Rock had a thing where his daughter's with Kim Kardashian. And he's like, once in a while, I'm actually the cool dad. You know, because they got to introduce his daughters to the Kardashians or something like that. It's like, that's how extreme it has to be for you to actually achieve that level. So anyway, so what's up with you, Joe?
It's still through somebody else.
So that's what's going on with Tim. Yeah. What's going on in Joe's world?
Joe's world.
Well, as you know, you guys already know this, but the solar panels are on my roof.
Ooh.
Finally.
Yeah.
I started this process in November and I finally have solar panels on
my roof.
And
a battery, right?
And a battery, backup battery. It's not Tesla. It's a Generac power cell is what it's called. But we started it, the installation on Monday, and it's been a long process. It's still not completely commissioned yet. I think they're supposed to completely turn it on in the morning.
Have an inspector come out, that kind of thing, right?
Well, that was what happened so today's Thursday. So on Tuesday, The power was going to be out for like a few hours while they switched everything over and everything, all good. And then the big holdup this whole time has been apparently like permits. It's been stuck in permit hell with the city and everything. So they turn the power off, and I'm just kind of like talking to them. They're like, yeah, well, once we get it all done, the city inspector is going to come by and give us his thumbs up, and then we'll turn it back on. I was like, oh, then it's going to be off for a week.
Oh, God.
Because of the headache city that we had. Well, sure enough, the guy came and he gave us thumbs up, but I guess didn't send the approval to the here it's called Encore is the name of the company, the guy that turns it back on. He either didn't send it or it didn't go through or something, but then he just kind of went home and they couldn't get a hold of him. So they were like, well, I guess you'll need to stay at a hotel tonight.
Dude, so lame.
Do this. Yeah. So I'm trying to just kind of be like, look, this is hopefully the last time my power ever goes out. Like that's the whole point of this. So just deal with it. But anyway, it's up there. Not quite turned on yet, but looks good.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you. I mean, you're now free. Energy independence is closer to your grasp, you know?
That was the whole point. Since we can't really trust our grid around here anymore.
Bananas, you know?
Yeah,
it's a thing.
That's cool.
It's
a thing. That's awesome. I mean, yeah, if I would have had solar at Mars when... I mean, granted, I just had bought Mars like the day before, and then there's that week long power outage or whatever. That was the worst. It's one of those things. I think it's the same with anything until you experience it. Like not having power for extended periods, like for even hours, is hilariously hard. Let alone like days.
That's the right term. Hilariously hard. Like I'm always like, people lived without this for most of human history. Just
all
fine.
Of a sudden,
and it happens to us, and we're just like,
It's not, it's not easy. Just little things, you know, that you're so used to. But the other big one is like, you know, if you see like flooding or something on the news, you're like, oh, that. But then if like you see it and you know people that, you know, get flooded, or you experience flooding yourself, or a tornado or something, some natural disaster, it's always like a million times worse than you can even dream up.
Yeah. It's shocking. And then if you have, you know, like I remember we had a power outage when our oldest son was very young, and it was hot in the summer. And that was like before we got our power walls and stuff. And it was like, wow. So it's no joke. You know what I mean? If it's 105 outside and you have a baby that needs to nap, otherwise it's going to be hell for the parents and everyone for the next day or two. Like it can be, you know, and that's just an extreme inconvenience. You know, some people it's like literally life or death if they have, they're a homebound or, you know, medical device kind of connected to them all the time and stuff. So,
Totally.
I mean, this is a big deal. So I'm stoked for you, man. I mean, I've been preaching it for years after we got ours, and it was just, it's so nice just to have that kind of, and now you can also power your own transportation, right? You can like, you have that independence as well. I mean, all you need is some water panels and, you know, the septic, and you're good.
I've been saying for a long time, I'm surprised that in general, like in the United States, more conservative, you know, people aren't bigger fans of solar because of like the independent aspect. You know, the government doesn't need to give me electricity and any of that stuff. I've been surprised. I did actually, so my brother-in-law's sister, I ran into her this weekend, and she was all excited that they just got solar online, and they live out in the absolute, you know, they live on a farm, like in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Iowa. And she's so excited. And she's like, all my neighbors are jealous, and everyone's trying to get on solar because, you know, we're independent that way. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah. You know? Like, it's about freedom. Yeah, like, it's not about being a tree hugger or liberal or whatever. It's about like, I don't care what the hell the grid does or what the energy company tries to fee or tax me to death. Don't care. I'll just disconnect. Say screw you guys, you know. Now,
or even just having the option and making the whole thing more robust in general, just a total win-win-win.
Let them know, if you didn't, that they do need some kind of battery in order to actually run off grid, because otherwise your solar won't work if the grid doesn't work, so, which is so lame, but that's just how they're built. So well, stoked.
Well, the independence thing, honestly, now that the gas prices are through the roof and everybody's like, oh my God, the pain of the pump and all that. I mean, I don't mean to be so smug about it, but I'm just kind of like, yeah, it must be terrible. but like, to me, part of having an EV and being an EV owner is a level of independence as well from like the fluctuations in the gas prices and stuff. Electricity prices go up and down too, for sure, but not quite the same way gas prices do. And it's not, is controlled by like foreign interests. Yeah. As gas prices.
That's
are.
A thing people don't understand. Yeah. Like, you'll see on the news reported that the U.S. is the largest single country in terms of oil that we drill or whatever. Right. Like we make more oil than any other one country. Oh. But it is a tiny fraction of the world's oil overall. We just happen to be the individual country that makes the most, right? Mm. So, and I don't know, just shout out to Raleigh Williams at Climate Town. I don't know if you guys have been watching him. I remember when his channel was tiny and I was like, I love this guy. I watch him. And now he's like blowing up and hits trending pages. Watch his latest video on gas prices. It's incredible. Raleigh, well, just look up Climate Town. That's Climate the channel. Yeah, Raleigh channel. Williams is the guy. Anyways, so on there, he talks about how gas prices work. And it's tied directly to oil, basically the price of oil. That's 90% of what it is. And we still import half of our oil that we use to then refine or make gasoline out of, right? And part of the OPEC Plus, which is a cartel, which is just another word for monopoly of the oil production in the world, is one of those countries is Russia. So when Russia is a part of the monopoly that owns the oil and we import half of our oil to make gas, things go haywire when they decide to start a war, right? So it's like, it's really simple how it all breaks down. But to your point, it's like, look, I don't care. Like I just, you know, if you want to be, if you really want to like be, you know, for America, then make your own oil, make your own energy for transportation on your house. Like it doesn't get, you know, we don't import any electricity, right? There's not like Saudi electricity coming over on a ship or something like that.
That's a long
cable. You know what I'm saying? I'm probably wrong. Someone's probably in the comments right now, but you get my point. Like,
actually, there's the undersea cable of 1944, which interconnected.
But you get my point that like, there's almost nothing more freeing and, you know, populist, I guess, than saying, screw everybody, I'm just going to do it myself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you get into eventually the long-term aspect, like supply chain issues of making solar panels and batteries and where all those things come from and the control of that, those substances too. I mean, it's not always just completely, the end game is that you can become independent and or, you know, self-sustaining. And that's
there's actually a huge thing going on in the solar industry right now. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but there was a company, I think out of Oregon or maybe California, that filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government for allowing basically China to sort of not money laundering, but like solar panel launder, like ship, sell their solar panels to Vietnam and then Vietnam sell them to the U.S. to avoid tariffs. And I'm, you know, oversimplifying that, but that's kind of the idea. And so because there's a legit investigation going on right now because of this, and because of that, something like 2/3 of all solar commercial solar projects are halted in the U.S. right now. It's like massive.
Commercial projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And
for solar power plants.
Yes. Yes. But that's still, that's the bulk of it in terms of the industry, in terms of where it all comes from. But you're right, Tim, in terms of, you know, those supply chains and things. And yeah, it's a challenge, you know, but in the end, you know, your solar panels are going to last you 20, 30 years, you know, maybe some repairs of an inverter here and there. And that's a long time, you know, for a relatively small investment, you know? So I think everyone needs to do it. Oh, and the tariff also, not the tariff, the tax credit is also dropping next year. I don't know if you know that. So Joe, you should get a 26% tax credit off of your entire purchase, which would include your battery. And then next year, I think it drops down to 22%. So if people are looking to get solar, they totally should try to do it sooner rather than later.
Speaking of US electricity and stuff, what is this in the news about standardizing chargers?
Okay. Let's do it.
Didn't mean to totally zip out of that one quick, but it was kind of in the same topic. So
no, totally. I should be able to share my screen now, so hopefully you guys can see that.
crash.
From our friends at Electrek, the White House announces plan for new standards for the first ever national network of 500,000 electric car chargers. It's kind of a mouthful. 500,000 is a lot, right? But it depends on what you mean by a car charger, right? Because we know electric cars can plug into a regular outlet. And so by that standard, we have billions already, right? So what do they mean by that? And so that's kind of the idea. So they're trying to create this network. By the way, this is a separate infrastructure bill, I guess, from the Build Back Better, which had the EV incentives. Those, I don't believe, have went through. So like we're still kind of on the same way that the EV incentives have worked. So this is part of a separate thing. But this one is a $7.5 billion investment for EV infrastructure and $7.5 billion to electrify public transport, which I have some thoughts on that as well. But basically, there's no details here other than they're investing in it and that they want to create a standard. You know, imagine, and Europe actually just did this for like USB, by the way. I don't know if you know. So USB-C,
I did see that, yeah.
USB-C is likely coming to iPhone in a couple of years because they're like, hey, this creates way too much waste. Everyone having their own separate chargers. So use this one or don't sell your things here. So they're trying to build a standard. I don't really know if it's that far off other than 500,000 chargers is like an absurd amount. Like I think Tesla last time, if you count Tesla for this, it would be like 20 something thousand. Maybe 30,000 supercharging stalls worldwide in the U.S. It's like,
what?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. Yeah. Last time I checked, someone can double check that now. And last time I checked, it was like a year ago. So I don't know. I doubt they like 10x'd it in a year or something like that.
Right. Not 10x, yeah. But maybe 50%.
Yeah. So, but what? Still, so 500,000 is like an absurd amount. If you think of the supercharger network as like the gold standard and it's just plentiful and everywhere and yay, you know, sunshine and rainbows, like 500,000 is like way, way beyond that. So this is a long-term thing. It'll take a while to get there. I think most of the money is probably going to go to Electrify America, EVgo, ChargePoint, some of these companies, because they're already doing all this. And you know, it's kind of cool. Like Electrify America uses CCS here in the US. And then EVgo also uses that. But EVgo also has a Tesla plug and a CHAdeMO plug at almost all of their stations. So it's kind of like whatever... You know, it's like kind of like one of those USB cables that has like three different things at the end of it for whatever you want to. So that's how they've been able to do that. That's why they're like more compatible, generally speaking. But yeah, it's exciting stuff because I think we need it.
Yeah.
So in that article or talking about standardizing, are they talking about the actual plug-in or standardizing an amount of wattage or voltage or something like that?
Yeah. Let me see if I could.
How about I use terms I don't know?
Yeah, exactly. So let me see if I can. So the quote here from the article is, no matter what kind of EV a user drives, what state they charge in, I don't know what they mean by that, like state of charge or like Texas versus Iowa, or what charging company they plug into, the minimum standards will ensure a unified network of chargers with similar payment systems, pricing information, charging speeds, and more. But wait, there's more. standards will also establish strong workforce requirements for installation, union, maintenance, and operations to increase the safety and reliability of charging station function and use, and create good and create and support good paying, high skilled jobs in communities across the country, especially those that vote for me in the next election. I added that last part on, but you could just assume that, you know, a lot of those words are really subtle, you know. Yeah. So there you go.
So because this is something where like, you know, some chargers currently charge by the amount of time you're at the charger. Some charge you by the amount, charge as in like bill you,
right.
I guess,
right.
By the amount of electricity that goes into the vehicle and like. You'd never know how fast is this going to be. Does this work? What app do I need? What payment system? Yeah. It needs to be way more just like gas,
yep.
Where you pull into a thing, you know, it's going to kind of be X, Y, and Z. And that this could be very good.
I mean, we're getting there, right? Like, but yeah, you're right. That's the idea. I think behind this is exactly that.
Well, you probably know more as a Tesla owner versus another car, like maybe a Rivian, maybe someone would have some experience driving one of those, both of those at some point in their lives. But you know, a Tesla just makes it so easy because they're still one of the most abundant chargers and you just know what you're going to get when you're at a supercharger. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted there's version 2 and version 3, but at least tells you 2 and 3 and they're within like, you know, it's not like night and day. It's not like one, you're going to sit there for 7 hours and one's 30 minutes.
Right.
Like
right.
They're within 5 to 10 minutes generally.
Yeah, I talked about it on the show before. You know, the non-Tesla charging world is not as bad as like I thought it was going to be. Right, I've got the Rivian now, so I don't have access to the Tesla network. And for example, we're planning a road trip up the coast in California, and there are tons of fast chargers between here and where we're going, all over. I would venture a guess that there's more stations, but fewer stalls than Teslas, right? Like, it seems like there are a lot more places, but there will be like 4 stalls versus, say, 40 or something like that, right? But there's also a lot fewer EVs that aren't Teslas. So, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. So it's not terrible. You know, and Electrify America is big. EVgo is big. ChargePoint. I haven't actually used a DC fast charging ChargePoint one. I mean, I'm only talking DC fast charging here, not like destination chargers, level 2 chargers. So it's actually not terrible. And pretty much every car in the US uses CCS outside of Tesla, right? Like every EV sold in the US that I'm aware of today currently uses CCS. It may be like a Mitsubishi something or other, or like some relative, you know, I'll say obscure, not in a negative way, but like a less common EV. But like any new EV you can think of that you've heard of in the last year, 2, 3 years, they all use CCS. So like standard, like it's pretty much there, right? Tesla is the one that, you know, it reminds me of Sony cameras. We talked about it, right? Where like in the very early days of digital cameras, Sony was one of the earliest. And so they like made their own SD cards that only worked in Sony cameras because there wasn't like... Yeah. A prevalence of them out there. And then it was years later before finally they you know, just kind of adopted the standard. So I know in I think Europe, Teslas do have CCS chargers as well. So, you know, it's not far off. I think that this is maybe overhyped in the media about it, like being so, you know, and there's adapters, you know, for the most part, but the high speed adapters are, I've seen people try and fail basically a lot. So like plugging into a Tesla into a high power DC charger, I've not seen work super well. So, but you know, we'll get there.
This is natural. There's a million different, you use the Sony example there, but there's a million different examples from history of a new technology that came out, and it's the Wild West, and there's all these competing standards and stuff. And eventually it does kind of filter down. There's like why don't we have like brackets, like Final Four, March Madness kind of brackets for technology, like working its way down to the final winner. But, no, I mean, it's kind of exciting to kind of be here and see it happen in real time with cars. Yeah. But I agree. I think we're getting
one thing
really
that's cool about CCS also that I didn't know this. So this is kind of neat. So a car with CCS with a CCS charger should support bidirectional charging. Like technically, like it can happen. The software inside the car has to like say yes and do it, but the actual pins and connectors. Should work. So, and that comes from my buddy Jehu Garcia, who you guys probably know on YouTube as well, because we were talking about this, about like how can we, because Ford has the Lightning with that thing, you know, with the home thing, so it could be your backup battery kind of thing, and you're like, well, how are they doing that? What kind of port? What kind of extra? And I was talking to Jehu. He's like, no, man, CCS works. Like it just totally. They just have to like build the software and kind of like all the other stuff to turn on the switches in order for it to actually work. So that's good news because there's a lot of, you know, basically every car out there in the US is being sold with that already.
Yeah. What about standardization of like software in cars so that they all have the same, well, no, I mean like the same charging maps and stuff like that. So like Nikki over at Transport Evolved just had a video where she was kind of deconstructing, I guess, a Wall Street Journal article.
Oh God, I saw that.
Where they drove from New Orleans to Chicago and was like, we were charging for 27 hours on this trip, but they went to the wrong chargers and they did the wrong things and stuff. And I mean, as somebody who, I mean, even if I had a non-Tesla car, I think I would be a little bit confused as to where to go exactly.
Yeah.
Because I mean, Tesla just kind of like tells you where to go, you know? And I don't know if other cars necessarily have that or not. I do think that it creates a tiny barrier of entry to people who just don't want to figure out a whole new thing just to drive their car. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that. I wonder if there's going to be some kind of standardization of like the maps and the software.
Well, that's a better route planner.com, you know, not sponsored, but like I use that a lot.
Right.
PlugShare is like good because you can really filter it down. And yeah, it's a challenge, you know, and every car maker tries to do it themselves. I would say, you know, because like I can get in my Rivian and say navigate here and it'll figure it out. I would say I don't trust it hardly at all. Like that whole system needs to be redone, but everyone's trying to do it. No one's nearly as good at it as Tesla in terms of like calculating and optimizing and stuff like that. I don't know. Yeah. So like maybe one day a company like a Better Route Planner that has now has logged a gazillion trips could do something like that. Right. They would have the data
just get integrated into cars.
They would have the data to build the sort of algorithm for any car to say, hey, here's how much energy I have. Here's how far I can go. I want to go from here to here. Tell me what I'm doing. Yeah, I could see that. That'd be a cool service.
How would it be? So did you see how the kind of off topic bit? I'll make it on topic. So you just see how Apple released new Apple
CarPlay?
Yeah.
Yes.
CarPlay. I was going to bring that up. Yeah. It basically like takes over the car.
Yes. Yeah. Super cool. Like almost just having an operating system for cars now that everyone's making their own infotainments. Now, what if this is all linked into Google Maps and Apple Maps, all the charging information? There's an API that talks to the car app on your phone too, so the car knows its state of charge, sends it to Google, blah blah blah, all this stuff in the back end, knows weather conditions, and it just all, you know, just automagically works.
1000%. Know? Yep.
Like I think we're realistically, especially with this huge influx of EVs, I think we're realistically within 2 or 3 years of that being
totally and it has to be Google or someone, you know, because the scale of it is pretty massive, right? Or it will be. It's not now, but and it's not something you'd ever want to fail, right? Like the reliability of that system would have to be just bulletproof, right? Because otherwise, imagine what kind of experience you'd have sitting there being like, it won't tell me where to go. I don't know what to do. Like,
right. Although hopefully in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, even if the system isn't robust, hopefully every gas station has chargers,
could be,
you know, high speed chargers. I think some of them are starting to finally
That. There's a couple.
I think it should be to the point where it's prevalent enough that you don't have to even use an app. You just look with your eyeballs and go to your nearest Flying J or whatever, you know, and be like, I'll just charge, you know.
Yep. No, I agree.
Yeah. Like the old days.
We'll get there.
So some mixture of both between extreme prevalence and smarter integrations, I think, in the next couple of years, is going to be never even
and,
a thing.
Yeah, there's so many opportunities there. I mean, I kind of fantasize about building a business around this that's just like a data services company, right? That just like collects data from all these different things, mashes it together, and creates APIs for other people to build like into their cars or whatever. And so, yeah, I don't know. So I have a lot to say on that, but you know, the future video. Do you guys want to talk Rivian or you want to talk space stuff?
I was about to make you talk Rivian.
Yeah, I want to hear about
one
this.
One way or another. I mean, I've seen some of the videos, but let's hear
all
it.
All right, so I got my Rivian, R1T, launch edition, blue.
Oh, just brag about it.
You just asked me to talk about it.
God, you just couldn't wait to bring that up. Just name drop. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Hand delivered by RJ. No. So do you have, how about this? Let's just do a Q&A. So what kind of questions do you have? Because I could go on forever and I don't want to do that unless it's relevant. So what do you want to know?
Everything. Okay. What? How do you like it?
It's in, so the, do you the like thing it? That, yeah, I'll give you a brief run. Driving and performance is incredible. It's the fastest truck ever made. People don't talk about this enough. It's like the Tesla Model S Plaid of trucks. And like, not even by a little, like it beats a T-Rex, the Ram TRX, by half a football field in a quarter mile race. Half a football field. That's so embarrassing. And it's like 30 grand cheaper. And you can like probably, it probably takes just as long to get it, I guess. It beats a Ford Raptor in a quarter mile drag race while towing a 6,000 pound truck. Like, that's how stupid fast it is. And it's like, people don't really talk about it. They're just like, oh, yeah, it's this off-roading thing. I'm like, no, I want to go fast, man. I love it.
Yeah. Imagine sitting higher up. It feels even
faster. It's absurd. Yeah. Have you ever been in a Model X? Well, I guess they have the Plaid now, but like a performance model. Because I took you guys in mine. I don't know. But like the fact that it was so big, it made it kind of hurt your brain a little bit. Right. It like made it seem even faster than it really was just because.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel. Yeah. Right. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Feel
whereas
right.
If you're in like a McLaren, you're like, oh, yeah, well, this is what I expected. Right. So exactly. Driving and performance. Great. comfort, seating, all that, incredible. We're taking it on a road trip because it's way more comfortable than Jenny's Model Y. Charging has been a real issue. And what I mean is home charging. So we have time of use pricing. So you only charge for about 6 hours a night to get the best rates. Maybe you can stretch that to 8 hours. But with a 48 amp charger, which is a wired fast as you can possibly get charger for it, we're getting about 20 miles of range per hour. So at 6 hours, it's 120 miles of range added total overnight, which means that if you came home from like an adventure, like they want you to do, and you have, yeah, I don't know, 10% battery state of charge, you're only going to get to 40, 50% overnight. You're not going to get anywhere near full. Whereas like in Tesla world, with Jenny's Model Y, my Model S, my Model 3, all of them, I wouldn't even think about it. Like I would just, I would just like two, maybe three times a week plug in and be fully charged, ready to go the next day. Not even a consideration. So you definitely want a high power wall charger with this because the battery is so big and it's just so inefficient comparatively. So that's been a challenge. Now, fast charging has not been bad. Like when I've stopped, I'm getting over 200 kilowatts at the charge rates, sustained up to 50% state of charge. So like really good at fast charging. So it can charge well, but like, yeah, it's going to cost more money. It's going to take a lot more time, all the things. You know, as far as the truck goes, love it. Moving couches, moving, you know, all kinds of things, beach trips, all that kind of stuff. Super functional, super awesome. Like really, really stoked we have a truck again. Also, the frunk is really useful because it has the it's like a trunk, you know, which trucks don't have. So it's nice just to put your groceries in there and all that. So just overall, absolutely in love with it. Charging has been a challenge. The tech inside can let's just you know, command control shift delete. Just kind of restart that a little bit, guys. Like Apple has this new thing. Let's just do that. All right. So let's just stop working on whatever software we've been working on and just go there, because the software you could just I could just delete it all basically. Like the maps, completely unreliable, will take you all kinds of different ways. I just posted a reel today on Instagram.
Is it not on like a Google backend or something? Like, do they try to do their own
thing? It uses Mapbox, which is actually really good maps. But so just if you watch my reel on Instagram, it's hilarious. Like I'm in Starbucks drive-thru. I'm in the drive-thru at a Starbucks. And I ask it to navigate to a Starbucks. And it says, oh, I found one 5.7 miles away. Would you like to go there? And I just kind of pan up to the Starbucks. Like, no, I'm literally at Starbucks right now. What are you doing? So it's completely unreliable. Even if you punch in the address to a place, it's going to give you, in my testing, mixed results. Not very good. So I just don't use it at all. Like, it's completely useless to me. Also, the media center, the infotainment stuff, how that's all integrated, because it's using the Amazon voice assistant. I don't want to trigger people's speakers or my own. It's also completely disjointed and wacky. Like, I asked it to navigate to work one time. And when I had got my Amazon speaker 7 years ago, when it first came out, I actually was at a company and that was set up as my work location. Well, when I got in my truck, I put in my work location and saved it as work. I told it to navigate to work, or asked it to navigate to work. It navigated to the company I was at 7 years ago or whatever. And so I'm like, what are you even doing? Like, none of this makes sense. Like, so the voice assistant is completely disconnected from the actual truck whatsoever. So like, weird. Again, control shift delete, just like format hard drive, like let's go Apple CarPlay full blah, blah, blah. Like, let's do that, guys. So I've actually done some things. I found a little button that will allow me to trigger Siri, because I don't like the voices. I don't like it listening. So I can do the thing where it triggers Siri, and I just do everything through Bluetooth. So like, it's annoying and frustrating and unreliable. At least in the Tesla world, which also has a similar thing, the voice assistant worked really, really good comparatively. And it knew what the car was doing. You know what I mean? It would be like, oh, yeah, like you saved this location in your favorites. I can say navigate there and it will do that. So so the fact that they're not supporting CarPlay and have told me in very certain terms that they will not support CarPlay because they believe they can create a better digital experience, I think is just completely absurd and full of hubris, and they just need to bend the knee on that one, you know. So the tech is my biggest complaint. It's very early, so hopefully these things can all get resolved. The vehicle itself overall, I'm just completely enamored with and so happy. Okay, we'll be right back.
So you know how, like, all we ever talk about is solid state batteries?
Yes.
It's all we want.
Give it to me.
Yeah.
When is this going to happen?
Tomorrow?
Well, maybe tomorrow? Maybe next week? Maybe next month?
Can't wait.
Maybe in just a minute when I finally pull this up, we can talk about this.
Stalling. This is Joe Stalling.
Stalling. I'm Joseph Stalling. That's what I'm doing.
But
I'm
bummed.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. No, I've never told that joke in my life. So, according to Green Car Reports, I believe this was shared by one of our sexy Patreon members in the chat, if I'm not mistaken. So there's this company called Solid Power, and on Monday, they announced the installation of a pilot production line for battery cells, solid state.
Ooh.
Sexy solid state battery cells.
Please, can it just be?
But they have investors in BMW and Ford. Those are car makers, for those who don't know. So it's a large format sulfide-based cell in a manner that mimics production processes for lithium ion cells. So they're trying to kind of use the same processes that we use right now to make all the batteries that power all the cars and stuff and apply it to solid state. Sweet. It says at full capacity, the pilot's line is expected to do 300 cells per week or 15,000 cells per year. I don't know how big these are. Like, is that a, are we talking about like
scroll down a little
cells
bit.
Or big cells?
You can see him holding him. Kind of like a,
oh, okay.
I don't know what you call that. Not iPad size.
Like a big cell phone.
Yeah. iPhone like Pro
Samsung
Max
Notes.
Double.
Yeah. The iPhone Pro Max Ultra Giga.
Mini iPad.
Yeah. .com. So
yeah.
It says the company's special sauce is an anode made with over 50% silicon.
Zoe didn't like that.
Zoe's a fan.
No, she does not like the silicon. she likes the regular lithium ion, guys. So it says BMW and Ford made initial investments in solid power in 2017 and 2019. They haven't discussed a specific time frame, but BMW says it has plans to have prototype solid state batteries ready by 2025 and production versions by 2030. So that still sounds pretty far away. It's not next week. It's not next month.
That's not that far, though. This is my heartbreaking.
I mean,
but it's always that. It's like fusion.
Yeah.
I think
Toyota already said that they have solid state batteries. Or no, Samsung did, and they were working with Toyota. But it's like to scale, to build up to manufacturing and all that, right? Like it's just at this stage. This is the holy grail, though. Once we get this, it's game over for gas cars. Gas cars will make no sense at all.
Because
who was it? Not Wendover. It was Cold Fusion or Real Engineering or one of these channels. They did a thing about this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but he was talking about how it'll actually be, it's not the right term, but it'll be more energy dense than gasoline. Now, it's not actually more energy dense. Mm-hmm. It's that if your car stores 15 gallons, that gives you X number of kilowatt hours of energy. But your gas engine is only 45% efficient, meaning it stores 300 kilowatt hours or something absurd, but you only get 45% of that. Whereas solid state is supposed to be like something like 10x of what we currently have in lithium ion. And if you put that much in there and it's 98% or 94% efficient, it would actually be have more energy and obviously be able to go further.
Usable energy
is a good way to put it. Yeah. But if that happens, then you have a $15,000 Honda Civic EV. That's awesome. That gets 350 miles to a charge or something, you know?
And they can charge a lot quicker too normally. Is that right?
Well, I don't know if they can, but they'll last longer is the deal, right? Because
you don't get the dendrites that you get with the lithium ion.
So the battery will last forever, essentially.
Well, that would be huge. Reduce waste and increase reliability and increased range. Yeah, all of the good things. Could be dense enough to maybe start actually using more and more for airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Know, that I wonder if it could be used structurally, like a structural battery pack. Mm-hmm.
I wonder too. Let's find out.
So this does also mention a couple of other... And we're done. It mentions a couple of others, like Volkswagen is backing a company called QuantumScape.
Oh, there you go. And Toyota.
We talked about before on here before. Yeah. And Nissan also has a plan for those.
What would you say in general? What do you guys feel like are the big races? Sorry, this is starting a topic that we probably shouldn't start, but just give me your the one that comes to top of mind. I think full self-driving is a big race right now.
Yeah.
Solid state batteries, big race. What are some other ones? Fully reusable rockets, small launch rockets.
Graphene.
Ooh. Graphene.
Like really, really using graphene.
Fusion.
Well, I mean, lithium extraction and processing of, you know, that's the massive one, because not just electric cars, but just like all the devices we have need it. So, and despite what other metals you choose.
But that's already here. What are things that are like just at the cusp where everyone's chasing to
like
be
like it
the
doesn't
first
exist
one to
yet.
Get these.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say those are some good ones.
Those are kind of the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to say commercial space flight in terms of like a commercial space station.
Right. And like,
I think there's a few people working on that, but
yeah.
Axiom's kind of way ahead of everybody, it feels like, or at least you hear the most about them.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe Boeing trying to launch a rocket would be one everyone's chasing.
Well, speaking of, should we go here? You guys ready for some rapid fire space news?
Are we going to get the angry everyday astronaut? I know there's already an angry astronaut, but
no, you're going to
get some of that vitriol.
Well, there might be a few things, but Boeing is not at the front of one of them right now. Boeing did in general. I mean, nothing's perfect in life. Just spoiler, earlier this month or last month or whenever it was, I don't know. I'm not here to tell you guys what day or time it is or anything. Boeing had a successful mission, a mostly successful mission. I mean, it was a successful. The mission was successful. That's what matters. To the International Space Station, they fully redeemed themselves almost with their Starliner. It was actually quite a good mission, frankly. Starliner, of course, is the for those of you unaware, is the other commercial crew launch vehicle under contract with NASA to get humans to the International Space Station. Crew Dragon so far has flown like six people, I don't know, like six missions to the ISS on 6 month rotations. Not to the ISS, but they've flown like five to the ISS with people already. It's crazy. This is Boeing's second uncrewed flight test. So there's no one on board. Redoing their 2019 attempt at getting to the space station. It was at the end of 2019 when they had OFT-1, Orbital Flight Test 1. It did not go well. Thrusters went crazy. All these things. We kind of talked about this last time. It finally did launch on, what day was that? I don't even remember already. I don't remember. Like I said, I'm not here to tell you dates and times. I'm sure you've heard about this. But the only real notes, besides they did take a Kerbal to space, which made me so happy. Jebediah Kerman made it to space.
When you said it was uncrewed for a second, I was like, wasn't there a Kerbal on there?
There was a Kerbal and Rosie the Rocketeer as well, who is just a mannequin used to measure some data. Let's see. What day was this? Moral of the story is it went mostly well. They did have some thrusters that were underperforming and were shut down. There are redundancies on all of these thrusters. Some even have like triple types of redundancies. Starliner has a lot of different thrusters. There's abort thrusters that are really powerful. There's orbital maneuvering thrusters and just little maneuvering thrusters. I think actually altogether, if I remember, there might be four different types of thrusters on Starliner. So it's like thruster city on there. And some of them weren't performing well. And if I remember right, they had a shutdown. I don't quite remember the number, but a handful of them. But it still made it safely to the station. Still got, you know, was approved to go closer and then eventually dock with the International Space Station.
So there were not people on this one. There was a mannequin and a whatever a Kerbal is.
Right, exactly. There really wasn't. There's no one on board, but then again, once it docks to the ISS, like you know, people at some point did kind of pop on into there. and have to check things out. So although it was uncrewed during launch and reentry, people have now entered Starliner in space. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice milestone. And of course, you know, when you're operating near people anyway, and with humans on board the ISS, like a lot of strong considerations. So the fact that they made it, got back safely, splashed down, or not splashed down, touched down safely, because they don't actually splash down. They jettison their heat shield. It lands on airbags in the middle of the desert, and it was very successful.
Isn't that like Blue Origin's thing? Isn't that what theirs is?
Yep. And kind of similar to the Soyuz as well.
Oh, okay.
in Russia. Also just does a hard touchdown or an actual touchdown. And uses the little bit of retro fire thrusters to kind of soften.
Why would you do one over the other? A splashdown in the ocean versus that?
I think splashing down is generally considered, I mean, it's easier as far as the forces mm-hmm. go and things like that. Like, you know, the water acts as a big impact yeah. absorber. So it's just easier to not have to worry about anything besides just your normal main parachutes and then just let the water kind of absorb the last, you know, 15 to 20 or 25 kilometers an hour, whatever it is, you know. But obviously you have there's a lot more involved in trying to retrieve a spacecraft from the ocean, get people yeah. out of it, blah, yeah. blah, 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 blah. Refurbishment becomes a bigger issue because you have salt water ingestion and things like that.
Well, and didn't we lose John Glenn's thing originally? Like, we lost the capsule, right?
Gus Grissom.
He was like the first, yeah.
Yep. Second Mercury mission, he was basically like, yeah, they lost yeah. the capsule, and it actually did get retrieved like 10 years later, 15, 20 years later, or not 15 or 20 years ago. It's pretty recently yeah. retrieved. Mm. And it's actually sitting in Kansas, which is really cool.
Is that the Liberty Bell?
I think
Liberty
so.
Bell 7? Yeah.
Yep. And that was, yeah. So, you know, there's definitely some challenges in splashing down. But in general, like the mission profile aspect is a little bit easier. Land touchdowns, though, obviously you have all the advantages of just like not having to have boats.
Yeah, you just drive over there.
Water, just drive over there and get the people mm-hmm. out, you know. But you have to, you know, you have to absorb more impact.
Though. Yeah.
I guess there's more places to land if you do it in the water because the world is mostly ocean.
Yes. That's a big thing. Like, you know, you have to be pretty darn accurate with your reentry if you're landing in salt flats where it's maybe only a, you know, it's a pretty small target area compared to
I was actually pretty,
ocean.
Yeah, I'm amazed by that.
Yeah.
How targeted they can be.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, they can, I think they were within like a kilometer of their, it was actually quite close. I think it was even closer than that. So it was a full blown bullseye.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So. Yeah. So great work to Boeing. This is looking good that they will be able to do their crewed flight test. So that will be that'll be hopefully this year, by the end of this year, they're hoping to do the crewed flight test, which would just be awesome to see. I think we all are ready to have multiple vehicles from the US able to fly crew to the United States in case something, God forbid, you know, something would happen with Falcon 9 or Dragon Caps mm-hmm. would ground those operations, you know. Actually, we do have a little bit of a concern right now with Dragon having some hydrazine leak or some hypergolic fuel leaks being picked up, and something, there's been like two different things with like a heat shield on one of them seeing one of the sensors actually read hypergolics, and another one that the current CRS mission is being delayed because of hydrazine issue. Exactly. Yeah, so I mean, this is exactly the reason why it's good to have redundancy.
Misplaced mm-hmm. hypergols are not something one messes around with. Sounds like a Jedi or something, you know.
One does not simply walk into hydrazine.
Exactly. So that's kind of a topical thing. That CRS mission, the resupply missions, commercial resupply missions, uncrewed, they do still have to. They're kind of going over some stuff because there has been some issues that have popped up. But that brings us to, there's a lot more. There's actually a lot of exciting news. Just some fun milestones that I wanted to share with everyone. These aren't necessarily things, I don't need to pull up the tweets. They're not necessarily that exciting. But on June 2nd, Firefly Aerospace out of Texas, some friends of ours, I was able to do the live stream of their last launch. Mm-hmm. And I was able to also do a tour of their factory with their CEO in Texas, and it was awesome. They officially shipped their second Alpha rocket to the launch pad in Vandenberg, they're looking at, you know, probably a couple months still from launching, but that's going to be great because it went quite well the first. It went well and not well the first time. They did. They're the company that had an engine shut down about 6 seconds into flight. One of four. So
yeah,
when you lose, so it was the one. And
it wasn't
going,
it like just
actually.
Kind of
going
sliding off to the right for a while?
That's the Astra.
That was Astra. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one happened like a few days later, and it shut down. You couldn't even tell it shut down at first. It just kind of slowed down, and then continued to go until it made it most of the way through its first stage burn before it cartwheeled out of control and blew up. Now they immediately figured out the issue almost like right away because they recovered the engines and they saw that this one plug was sheared, like a connector, literally just like a connector that powers, that turns on the main valves to the engine. Man. Just one of the engines just had a bad plug, and it's like, oh, I guess that should be double checked and, you know, done better, I guess. But so that's great to see that they are working on getting out for the return to flight in their second launch attempt. So that was very cool. On that same note, another really fun one is Relativity Space, the 3D printed rocket.
Cool. I was going to ask about them. Yeah.
Yep. They shipped their rocket finally out to Cape Canaveral as well. So on June 5th, their first booster arrived to Cape Canaveral. They are targeting launching this year. I don't remember how soon. I've been hearing different things, but I think they're within like also a couple, 2 or 3 months away, I think, already from their first launch attempt of their Terran 1 rocket, which is, like I said, fully 3D printed fuselage and everything. Super cool concept. Can't believe it's finally happening. Like this is one of those companies that when I first heard about them, I thought like,
yeah, like no way.
Never
happen. Yeah.
Like, no, you know, you're not going to 3D print a rocket, you know, like. It just seemed ridiculous, but they are at like they within it was, it took me about probably a year and a half ago before I was like, oh, wow, this is actually serious and legit and doable. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the idea of 3D printing at this scale. It seems like there's better ways to make a tube, cheaper ways and simpler ways to make a tube. But there are components that are amazing for 3D printing and worst case scenario, even if they're just kind of flexing their muscles right now, showing like, hey, we can 3D print the whole rocket, having that technology, you know, in their wheelhouse is huge. Hey,
are they making their own engines or are they just buying RP-1s or whatever?
No. RP-1s is the fuel.
Damn it.
They are
RS-25.
Yeah. One giant space shuttle rocket engine. No, they built their own engines. I'm blanking on it right now. It's been a little bit of time since I've talked about them. But if I could share the screen here, I'll show you.
Send me a link.
I'll send you a link. Here you go. Oopsies. Copy. I'm throwing it into this thing. But, you know, their Terran 1 is looks a lot like it would be kind of like a bigger version of Rocket Lab's Electron and a smaller version of SpaceX's Falcon 9. But it's a very common architecture these days is to have 9 engines on the first stage and 1 engine on the upper stage. And the reason for that is it kind of works out well for, you know, when you're trying to scale up manufacturing and things, it works out well. You need a lot more thrust for your first stage because you have a lot more weight of the rocket. So you put 9 of them on there and it tends to be a pretty good ratio than to have a single one of those engines on your upper stage with a larger vacuum optimized engine. So we are seeing that more and more often is 9.
Is it common to shrink wrap your rocket? Is that?
It actually really? Is common.
It's like Amazon packaging just shows up, you know, like God, it's going to take forever.
There's a famous story about the final Falcon 1, or not the final, but it would have been the final. It was their like fourth launch attempt, and I think Falcon 1 only flew 5 times if I remember right, but it was their down to their last dollar, literally. Like this was their last possible chance to go to orbit. If they didn't make it to orbit, SpaceX would have been done. And they were in such a hurry, they actually flew the Falcon 1 on a C-130 plane, and when it got up at altitude and they started coming back down from altitude, it started actually crunching the stage because it had, you know, it has one way valves where, you know, it bled the pressure out to equalize. but it can't go back. So all of a sudden,
you're like pull up,
it's
pull
getting
up.
Compressed. Yes. So that's someone ran into the cockpit and goes, pull up now. And they literally had to pull up while the people are, you know, ripping through the shrink wrap with knives, trying to unscrew bolts.
Let the pressure out.
Relieve pressure.
And just hope that it doesn't just pop one off and go through the plane's fuselage.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, pressure like that is crazy. You know, the amount of force, 14.7 PSI, you know, 15 pounds per square inch. That doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have thousands or millions of pounds of square inches, like, it's a lot of force.
That would be so cool. I'm excited for them. It just seems like, I mean, you know, obviously SpaceX changed the game in aerospace, but like, this is kind of like another thing that's like new and different, you know? Yeah. Yes. So it's kind of exciting.
Yep. And so, we have them. So we have we have Firefly. We have,
Relativity.
Relativity. Thank you. And we have Astra, who announced a new rocket as well. I will also share this link. I went to this press event because I had to be out in I was in Las Vegas anyway the next day. So I popped on over to San Francisco to catch the announcement of the Rocket 4.0 from Astra. I put that in the chat there. Yep, you got it. Cool. This is basically a bigger version of what they have currently been flying. Go ahead and scroll down to Rocket 4.0 overview. It's quite a bit bigger. It's instead of being about 1.2 meters wide, if I remember right, it's 1.8 meters wide. So it's quite a bit bigger, quite a bit wider, but that still can fit in shipping containers. That's kind of their thing, is they want their rockets to fit and their launch infrastructure, everything to fit in shipping containers and just boop, show up on trucks and be able to launch very, very quickly. But what's interesting is they went from having five of their own engines to having just two much more powerful engines. Each engine is as powerful as the five that they had made. What's interesting, the engines they're using are using the tap off cycle, which is that where you basically punch a hole in the side of your chamber and you let that pressure spin the turbine, which then powers the pumps to spin your engines, to power your engine. So it's weird that your engine has like a hole in it, you know, and, I have to be very clear here. This has not yet been confirmed, but most people are saying and reporting that these engines are quite literally, they actually bought them from Firefly. Which would be really cool. I'm personally a huge fan of people buying. We don't need an engine for every single rocket when there's like so many good engines out there, and our research and development is so expensive, you know, and everyone's trying to reinvent the wheel always. Like, why not just, we need more just off the shelf solutions. And so if that's true, if they indeed just purchased engines from Firefly, that would be awesome. Very cool.
Love that.
So, yeah. So that's cool. So that's going to be hopefully, I forget what they said. If they're saying it was going to fly this year, I don't even remember. It feels like that was 6 months ago and it was only 2 weeks ago or something, 3 weeks ago. But so, yeah. So those are the three kind of upcoming launch you know, things to look forward, launch companies looking forward to. Elon tweeted something really excited here that I'm throwing your way again. They had an all hands meeting at SpaceX where he showed off just kind of a deck of information and just some highlights here. They were saying that they were averaging a launch per week, which they are. This is actually one of the, they just launched yesterday, but before that it was like, you know, I mean, it's been basically every single week, which is nuts. They've had 160 total successful launches. Actually, now I think it's 161 because they launched yesterday. 122 successful landings, now 123, and 99 reflights. They also are up to, they might have up to 4 Falcon Heavy missions in 2022.
Oh, really?
So it might be a...
I thought the thing was done, man.
So like this year?
This year, baby. They just had to wait for more payloads. They were kind of ahead of their time. They were ahead of the customers and just waiting for payloads. Yeah, 2019. They haven't launched one since 2019. They launched two in 2019. Yeah.
I'll be dead.
Okay, so then we got first off civilian crew. They're going to have a spacewalk this year with Dragon. They showed off Starlink is their 3-year anniversary. They've launched nearly 500,000 users and counting for Starlink in 32 countries. And
I've never
languages.
Seen this
That's
animation
amazing.
Before. This is amazing.
That was
oh, okay. This isn't real. Yep. This is the idea, right? Because that's Starship.
Yep.
Or that.
Yeah. Yep, that's Starship, and that's the Pez dispenser idea for their next Starlink satellites.
Oh, I love it.
Pretty cool,
that's
right?
Actually super cool.
And these Starlink satellites are huge. They're like 5 times heavier than current Starlink satellites, and they're about 7 meters wide. Wow. And that is huge. That would not fit anywhere near a Falcon 9 rocket. So they are relying on Starship. And even though they're already producing, Starlink 2.0, they are relying on Starship to actually be able to launch these things. So the pressure is on for Starship. Mm. If you think that SpaceX is just going to give up on Starship, you know, because it seems too ambitious, nope. It's absolutely happening because the company is relying on it. Now, at the very end here, you'll see they also showed off a rendering of the factory of the future, what Starbase will hopefully look like once they're going to get rid of all the tents and build. There's Factory of the Future Starbase and Factory of the Future mm-hmm. Cape. And beautiful renderings. I hope that they keep a big, huge amount of glass so people driving by get something to look at and stuff. I just think that's
the most unbelievable part is that Cybertruck is here. So, you know. I don't know. Which is going to come first, Starship or Cybertruck? Well, remember when we first started?
Ooh, that's actually
it was like,
question.
Dude, where's my car? Remember we had that segment? Because both you guys are waiting on your Model 3s. Mm-hmm. I feel like we need that, like, dude, where's my Cybertruck? Like,
Cybertruck, definitely. But it's, you know, I think Starship's going
to Really?
I think Starship will go orbital before deliveries of Cybertruck.
Yeah,
happens.
So, because, I mean, every time we talk, it's like, I don't know, Starship, was it coming? Like, what's going on? Like, I feel like we, you know, a year or 2 years ago expected an orbital test. Like, where is that at? Is it closer? Or?
Yeah, so that is another big thing that happened is by the end of the last month, we were supposed to have the FAA was supposed to give their, that's not an endorsement, but it was getting through the preliminary environmental assessment on whether or not SpaceX can launch from Boca Chica without destroying everything holy and important in life. But the unfortunately, they had to push the environmental assessment back to June 13th. This is like the sixth delay of this assessment from the FAA. But it's the first time it's been less than a month. They've always been saying next month, next month, mm-hmm. next month. And now this is the first time they were like in 2 weeks. So that's actually in 4 days from now. We should be getting the final programmatic environmental assessment from the FAA. People are constantly saying, you know, I can't believe this is taking so long. The FAA is just, there's so many conspiracy theories abound really about why this is all taking so long and stuff. And really it's just a bunch of boring paperwork.
It's the government. When does anything move fast? You know?
Yeah. No. And this is actually pretty quick. Like realistically, this is pretty quick for something like this, this big, you know, and, they had to read through like 5,000 comments or whatever, public comments too. And
let's be glad they're not putting in solar panels. That would really take a long time.
But all said and done, it is looking, you know, a lot of people are kind of hearing rumblings that this is expected to actually go through. SpaceX is pushing very hard to get the Booster 7 and S-24, the Starship 24, tested and on the pad and ready to go. And
that'd be amazing.
You know, there's, I still have no idea. I'm done trying to guess. It is pointless because not even SpaceX knows when this thing will actually launch, but they're definitely making more of a push all of a sudden in the last couple of weeks.
So,
you know,
the boosters out there, it exists, right?
Boosters getting fitted with engines.
Okay,
as we speak.
So we've not now. Will you static fire that? Yeah.
Oh yes, and that was something that Elon just mentioned the other day on Twitter in response to me that they'll start with. He said just one at a time at first, but I said he did one of those things where I asked like, are you going to go one engine at a time or
one like booster
ring section at a time, like the outer ring, the inner ring of engines? Mm-hmm. And he said only one at a time first, and people are taking that as. In my opinion, they'll do something very similar to other engines where they'll do like, you know, maybe one Raptor at very first just to make sure things are okay. Then like a cluster of three and like the inner ring, then the outer ring, and then maybe all 33. Yeah. But yeah, it'll be progressive. You know, it'll be progressive just like
and
almost everything they do.
Raptor 2.0 is good to go.
Yeah, they're cranking them out like crazy. They are more powerful.
So I remember there was that email, I don't know how long ago, from Elon about like, oh, if we don't get this right. And you were like, yeah, but they're getting it right. So it's fine.
Well, and it was like, it was just one of those, he was just putting pressure on like, we need to ramp, you know, we're going to have 33 of these on the booster and six, you know, almost 40 engines per rocket. And they're hoping to produce like one a month. Like if you're not cranking out just engines through your eyeballs,
yeah, it's a lot.
Then, you know, and they're relying on these. Here's the weird thing. Okay. When you actually stop and think about this, like these are a fully reusable rocket. So you don't necessarily need like a fleet of 1,000 right. of them to perform a lot of work. But he doesn't see this as that really. He sees this as, you know, they're going to be doing, you know, they do want to have like, they want to have these as common as airplanes, you know, and as jetliners. So like they do want to have thousands of these things and thousands of these things flying, mm-hmm. you know, multiple times a day.
That'd be nuts.
Like that's what they're really aiming yeah. at. So if that's the case, you have to have engines like you wouldn't believe. And yeah, that's because that's where he sees this going. That's, I think, where he's betting all of his money and his time and effort.
Well,
like,
and Twitter. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, too.
Maybe not all of his effort. Yeah.
Some of it. Most of it. I still, you know, a funny thing about Elon, you know, without getting into the weeds of it, I still really, and this obviously just comes from knowing you, Tim, and talking all these years about it, I feel like he is so much more of a space nerd than he is a car nerd. You know? Like when he talks about space yeah. stuff, he seems really excited. When he talks about Tesla stuff, yeah. it's just up, like, yeah. I hate the auto industry is kind of the vibe I get, you know, and I don't blame him. Like, it's definitely not fun or exciting. Like there's things about it that are easy to hate, you know, but yeah. So it's always right. funny to hear. Cause yeah. I bet in the Tesla community, people probably don't even like, oh yeah. And he does SpaceX. And I'm like, I bet you like in right. his day sitting down, hey, Elon, let's just like take a day off and just do whatever the hell you want to do. He's going to be down there at Starship, just walking around, you know, that I think that's where he would, that would be yeah. my guess. That's where he'd want to spend his day.
I agree. I think that's definitely his full like life's yeah. passion is SpaceX. And he knows everything about his Tesla cars. He knows literally everything about his rockets that you can know as far as I don't, you know, it's so funny that people get like, oh, he doesn't actually know anything. The guy knows, he might not know like in depth every single thing, but I think it'd be hard to say there's someone with more overall knowledge of a system. Like the width of the knowledge is insane. Mm-hmm. Maybe the depth yeah. isn't like, you know, the most hardcore engineer out there that's sitting there literally like, you know, he might not be at that level. But I think as far as if you take like the total amount of information in that guy's brain on rockets,
yeah. he's insane. Not a dummy, but it's you insane. could probably stump him with a few really detailed questions on some things, right? Is that yeah, you know, like,
of course,
like yep. when you talk, but that's yeah. that's what his job is, as far as I see it, you know.
Yeah, it is the yeah. overall.
It's not like, to talk about architect. Like how you what setting you put on that one machine to make that one part. I don't care. Here's what the part exactly. does. You make it, right?
Yep. Exactly. So that's all honky dory FAA. Hopefully, we hear back, you know, in a couple days, in 4 days. But there's one more thing that just dropped this morning that I haven't had time to read through at all. I was recording a video today, and I haven't even looked at this. But it's about SLS, which is currently, by the way, back out of the pad for its second dress rehearsal. That was another thing that happened. Remember, it mm-hmm. had a wet dress rehearsal, rolled back into the VAB to be repaired and tweaked and fixed, and now they're out there for the second attempt of wet dress rehearsals in a couple weeks. But meanwhile, the OIG, which is the
Inspector
what is
General.
That, the Office of Inspector General, yep, released a pretty, I think damning would be the right word. They released a NASA's management of the Mobile Launch Tower 2. So the second, they currently have one launch tower for SLS, Block 1, and they have to build a second launch tower. And that one cost over $1 billion, by the way. That one tower cost $1 billion. This one is basically the same thing, but a little bit taller. Ben, if you open this up and scroll way down, we can get a good side-by-side version of these two systems.
This guy?
And now, it was originally supposed to cost something like $400 or $500 million. And $400 million, I think. but they are projecting it to cost $1.5 billion and a delivery date of December 2027.
Oh my God. Guys. Yeah. Okay.
So five times the cost and two more years late.
We need to pull the plug on this. Okay, I'm going to vote. Second, does anyone second that motion?
How high up does $1.5 billion stack?
Well, $1 billion is over 100,000 kilometers.
Yeah.
I mean, over 100 kilometers. So it crosses the Kármán line. It's like 101 or something. So it'd be like 150.
In what, singles?
Yeah, like, single $1 bills. Yeah.
Coins? Yeah, like what do you...
I don't know. It's just like, why is this? So that's putting Artemis 4 at a no earlier than end of 2028 launch date. And if they're saying that now, the fourth Artemis mission wouldn't be until I'll say 2030.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'll only be the third mission with people on it.
How much, you know, would it be possible to like start a space company right now and beat them to this? Right. Like if we had infinite money and we could just call SpaceX and be like, yo, let me buy some engines. I'm going to do this. We'll do a few parts on our own and then we'll have these guys. And then
we did it in the 60s. You know.
Yeah, that's what gets me. Like we did all this in like 5 years.
That's what I mean. Like it seems. Everything.
Yeah. Like literally the F1 and the Saturn V really didn't start development until like 63, 64 and had people on the moon in 69. Like, mm-hmm. What the heck? You know, how is this?
Over-engineered, red tape, bureaucracy, typical. Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing is, we're seeing SpaceX already built a tower like this, only this one has a robot catching arm and stacking built-in crane system. They already built that.
Oh, does
that.
This not catch the SLS on the way back down?
They already
built
that.
Doesn't it just
that.
Eat it into space? I mean...
Think about it. That didn't really exist. That tower didn't really exist in like February of 2021. So a year later, it was like, I mean, it's still not quite done. We'll say it's not done, but it'll be a year and a half between like nothing to completion. And it's a way more advanced thing. And I guarantee they did it for like less than $1 billion. Guaranteed. And like, I don't even think they've hardly spent a full billion at all of Starbase yet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like... So, and we're seeing them, they'll have one built in Florida, at 39A before it's just, I mean, yeah, way before any of this.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
I mean, not to sound down on this, but just like what is special about this rocket? Is it fully reusable? Okay.
No.
So.
It's not even
that's what I mean, right? So like I get it if you're trying to do something totally new and whatever, but like I it's big, I guess, is the thing. That's
it's the first rocket since the Saturn V that was designed from the ground up to take humans.
Yeah, but
you know, just
it's a solved problem, you know? Like it's not you know, obviously with all things considered, it's not that hard. You know, it is hard. I'm not trying to say it's simple and like I could do it or anything, but like,
right. But
this, I mean, analogous, but not on the same scale as like these car companies inventing their own software for the cars. It's like, we already have the answer. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, frustrating.
This is crazy. I still think, what if they just had tried to rebuild the F1 to be, or the Saturn V just to be like, just cheaper. Like, hey, we're going to walk into the door and I want you guys to make the Saturn V four times cheaper.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They probably could have done it, but yeah.
Well, I did a video. It was a lightning round video recently. And I talked about, I guess it was Dave Rubin. No. What's
Robert
the guy's name?
Zubrin?
Robert Zubrin. Yeah.
Dave Rubin's the one that people say I look like. He's a political commentator.
I could see that. Yeah. Yeah. The political.
I've
guy,
never
yeah.
even seen him. I have no idea, people tell me that.
But no, Robert Zubrin from the Mars Society, I think. Yeah. But talking about how like going to the moon, we kind of already have everything we need right now in terms of like The Falcon Heavy is not crew rated, as you chimed in and so eloquently spoke about, Tim. but you could launch, you know, the LOP G stuff up there, or the Gateway stuff, or whatever. You could use it to launch everything up there, and then just launch people up on a Dragon capsule, a Crew Dragon, connect in space, get everything together, go off to the moon. Like, we've got everything we need right now to do that.
Yeah.
And you see stories like this, and it's just like, what are we doing?
I just still can't imagine. The craziest thing to me is how, forget LOP G, forget any of the other infrastructure at all that NASA's currently planning. If Starship, if they're already hiring Starship as the human lander system, that will be in, at some point, will be in low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a Dragon up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Dock to it there, and then carry out the mission. Like, that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Solved. Right
there. What are we? Yeah, use Dragon as a little safe taxi, you know, and
we'll just take our consulting fee now, NASA. Just? Okay.
It's just crazy.
I hate being like that about NASA. NASA is an incredible agency, has done amazing things, right, and I think changed the world in a lot of ways. But it's really hard to not get.
Well, Andy Law reminds us in chat that, to be fair to NASA, they were mandated by legislation written by Congress. So
it's
not NASA. It is the system that they have to operate in, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the people at NASA are brilliant, still
exactly
some of the smartest, you know, there's still always, like, if you hear someone, you know, ooh, do you work at NASA? You know, it's like used as like almost sarcastic, like, oh yeah, are you a genius?
I have a buddy that does work at NASA, and every time we would go to a bar and he'd be talking to a girl, he absolutely would mention it. So yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, other than us ranting, what are you guys working on?
Stuff. Joe?
I'm going to be very out of pocket for the next month or so, doing some traveling and
Zoe's ready.
And dog sitting.
And dog stuff, yeah. So I'm just trying to get ahead on videos and have them lined up so I can have those cranking out while I'm
going anywhere cool.
Ireland?
Mm. Orlandia.
That's cool. Yeah. Very cool. I love Ireland.
Do I want to tell everybody where I'm going to be?
Earth.
No, we're traveling over there for a bit, and I'm going to be in New York next week and LA. There's just some traveling around that I'm doing, so I'll kind of land it all at once. But yeah,
awesome.
That's awesome.
I'm doing the same.
What are you?
I'm getting ready next week. Last week of school for the kids, so packing up in the Rivian, heading out on some road trips, and then. I have like 3 videos that I've shot that I haven't published, so those will be coming out, but then I'm taking off till September, like last year, so I'll be off for 2.5 months. Come back and do this once a month for you guys, because that's easy and fun, and I just like doing it, but otherwise, yeah, I'll be completely off, and getting ready to launch my new website, so an e-commerce store, and preparing for Fully Charged Live in San Diego, and all those things, so, you know, but you only get 18 summers with your kids, and so I want to make the most of them with mine, and so taking that time off.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Good priority.
Yeah. You know, you're sitting on your deathbed. You'll remember those summers you spent. You won't remember the extra money you made, right? So that's what I...
Definitely.
Yeah. What about you, Tim?
That's great. Finishing up parts 3 and 4 of the Elon interview. Those are lining up with... we also have to finish up getting the new merch stuff ready for the shop. Part 4 of the Elon interview is being accompanied by a video explaining the differences between Raptor 1 and Raptor 2 as like an accompanying video. What do you guys think on that? Like, is it stupid to drop literally 2 videos at like the exact same time, or should they be staggered by like at least a half hour or something?
Are they on the same topic?
So one is the interview with Elon about Raptor 2.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is comparing, and like I want it to be like a resource for that
video. Sure.
That's Raptor 1 and Raptor 2, you know, like Raptor 1 versus Raptor 2 kind of.
I think it's fine to do it both at the same time. I mean, if they're complementary to each other,
I would be a terrible business capitalist here, and I would say that the complimentary accompaniment video is Patreon only, so if you guys want to watch that, go over to Patreon and sign up. And then release it a week, and then release it a week later publicly, right? Or just wait a week and then it'll be out here, something like that. So it's like, you know, you're paying to get access or something like that. And you've got a great Patreon community already. So, you know, anyways, that's what I would
do. Yeah, but I just think it's important to be able to have that resource, though, for the average person that's like watching it now, like to just, you know, feed some of those curiosities right away.
You're a better person than I.
So I'm just debating, like, I might make it so you watch the Elon interview and then it, like, the soonest it could possibly that someone has finished watching it, you know, like if it's a 40-minute video.
Do you mention it? Do you mention it in the? Okay.
Yeah. I'll be mentioning it in that part.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, there is an accompanying video. So when you're done with this, if you have more questions, you know, you can use this video.
And you'll put like the card or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yep. And a link in the description.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably do them both at the same time. Just, you know, maybe 10 minutes apart or something. Yeah. Because otherwise people are going to skip anyways and jump around and whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Could you do that? Could you just arrange a 4-part Elon interview like once a quarter and then just not make videos? Like, just do that. Like, they all do so well. Like, you're just, hey.
Like, wouldn't that be? Wish. It'd be
like,
fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and, you know, it's just funny because I've been working on like 9 other things right now. And so obviously these are some of the most exciting, I think, like long-term future, like, you know, almost history in the making, being able to interview him like this. But it's almost like when this one, the timing of this one was like, this is terrible timing. Cause I'm trying to do like this is all these little things, kind of like personal life in the back end things. And I'm like, oh my God, now I have to stop what I'm doing and like make these, you know, but totally awesome. Obviously super thankful for those opportunities. So,
yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah. So that's what's going to be next. And then lots of just random things. Oh, I'm going to finish the van the end of this month because there's going to be static fires coming up of Super Heavy and hopefully, you know, Firefly launching and Vandenberg. We want to take the van out for that. There's going to be Falcon Heavy at the Cape and Relativity at the Cape. Like, we might have the van back and forth across the country multiple times.
You could, after your next merch drop, you could just like buy another van also and just kind of keep them, you know?
Oh God, that would be, I mean, that would be cool, but it's a lot. Could
start like a WeWork of vans, you know?
Oh no. The coolest thing would be if we just put it in a shipping container and just hired a freight company just to ship it across the country.
Yep. I love it.
That'd be the coolest. Yep. All right. Well,
good to see you guys.
Good seeing you
as well.
We'll see you guys.
I love you guys so hard.
And we'll see you in.
We'll see you
our
in
ludicrous,
ludicrous future.
Future.
All right. Awesome. Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for joining.